Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. And we go to our 102.5, The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are you doing this morning?
Awesome. Thanks for taking time to be great with us. Big day for Justin Jefferson a couple days ago, Charles. 4 years,
yeah.
$140 million, $110 million guaranteed. Great day to be Justin Jefferson. Most days are a great day to be Justin Jefferson. Number one, what did you make of that deal, and what do you think this will set up for guys like CeeDee Lamb and Ja'Marr Chase moving forward?
I mean, it's a great deal to be any player in the NFL, you know, a top-end player who's not a quarterback, because I think it impacts everybody. You know, when you see a wide receiver bump the – non-quarterback pay to $35 million a season. And again, remember, this is not a traditionally – I mean, covered the league for 24 years, right? And it's always been you pay four guys, quarterback, elite offensive tackle, elite pass rusher, elite cornerback. Those are the four positions you play. Well, now it's wide receiver. Like, you can go ahead and stick that in that mix. And it's interesting because I kind of looked at the numbers, and by the time – Ayuk's deal comes in, T. Higgins' deal comes in eventually. I know I'm leaving somebody else out of the mix here. Oh, Ja'Marr Chase. You know, when
CD.
These other deals, CeeDee Lamb. When these deals come in, I think it's like 18 or 19 wide receivers next year, or by the time these deals come in, will be at an annual average value of $22 million or more. Guess how many cornerbacks in the league currently have an AAV of $22 million or more? Zero. So you can go ahead and that big four positions that you pay, you can go ahead and bump corner out of there and put wide receiver in if you're going to keep it at four. But it's going to be five because now all these corners are going to go, wait a minute, we're the ones out here. we're the man coverage guys. We're the ones, you know, I follow – the team's number one wide receiver around the field, or, you know, you use me to set up half of, you know, the defense on the back end. Now you need to pay me, you know, 22, 25, you know, $30 million as a cornerback. It's going to be something that I think raises all boats, and it's a real deal, you know, 4 years, $140 million. It's like, well, I want to say like $111 million guaranteed when you really get into the nitty gritty of it. It's an unbelievable amount of money. And another thing, too, that's interesting is, so teams, there's sort of this rule of thumb that if you have three elite players who are really going to be paid at the top of your salary scale, what you have to try to do, and I don't know if there's any real, like, research why they put the line where they put it, but you will talk to some cap people and they'll say, never pay in any given year your top three salaries. If you have elite players, never let them get beyond 40% of your cap. So that's sort of like this imaginary line. So I went out and I started looking. I thought, okay, the Lions had a big offseason. They signed, you know, Goff, Penei Sewell, and Amon-Ra St. Brown to these huge deals. Let me see the worst intersection of these three deals. It's in 2026. It's like $130.1 million between those three players. Well, when you project out the cap to 2026, this might be a slightly aggressive projection, but there are some projections, in-house projections for teams that think the cap will be about $320 million to $330 million in 2026 because of, you know, some pretty aggressive cap jumps now that new money is kicking in the next couple of years. Well, guess what those three numbers equate to? Like 39.6% in that worst, you know, intersection. So I think that's what some of these teams are starting to look at. Now, like the Vikings, because they have the J.J. McCarthy contract, it helps you to kind of rob Peter to pay Paul. But there are other teams, the Cowboys are going to have to look at that 40% mark. The 49ers are going to have to look at that 40% mark. I don't know what the Eagles are doing. They're paying like a trillion guys. So I'm not exactly sure how the math works in Philly. But it's going to impact a lot of positions and players. And I think the pipeline – of prospects, you know, at lower levels, where if you maybe have a prep player who's like, hey, I'm an elite level cornerback, I'm also potentially an elite level wide receiver, Travis Hunter, what do I want to be at the next level? Do I want to be a wide receiver? Do I want to be a cornerback? Where's the money? If I think I can be an elite level wide receiver, probably want to go and play that rather than play elite-level cornerback. Again, Travis Hunter, pay close attention to that kid at Colorado. And I thought of Joe, too, because we talked about DeAndre Hopkins. I think a deal like this is going to take some teams out of the running. If, like, Ayuk and Higgins hit free agency next year, I think there are going to be some teams that tap out and go, we don't want to do this. We don't want to get into this, or we can't afford because we've got other guys to pay to get into this sort of arms race for these second-tier wide receivers. Let's go patch it up with one of these guys that's 30-plus years old, who's a free agent next offseason, and sign a 1 or 2 year deal. So I think it'll actually help even some of these aging guys that are going to be in the mix in free agency offseason. And as Joe said last week, I'm like, maybe you do want to try to get ahead of Hopkins if you think he's got a year or two left.
So, yeah, no, interesting discussion on the cap. You know, you sometimes you forget the teams pay like hundreds of thousands, maybe seven figures in some cases to their capologists, right?
Yeah.
To figure this
yeah.
stuff out. It's almost like people who talk about the cap being fake or sound like total idiots. I did have a quick question for you on the upcoming deals, because I personally think Jefferson's the best receiver. That doesn't necessarily mean the next guy, if the next guy's close to him, won't get more. Do you think that Lamb and Chase will be a tick ahead of his deal just because theirs come later?
I think Chase will best this deal. I really do. Because I think that, you know, now injuries and you know, look, Jefferson had an injury last year, Jamar Chase has suffered an injury, but I think both teams value them the same way, that they set the table for a large majority of their offense. And you know, basically they won't come out and say it, but part of what teams are paying for too with some of these guys, and I think in particular a guy like Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, you're paying to never see single high safety, okay, ever. Like you're never going to see a situation where you're basically facing a defense. There's only one safety back there. You're affecting the running game. You're affecting your quarterback. And I think that's part of how wide receiver became one of the positions that you pay, at least when it's an elite guy, is because of the multitude of positions you're affecting. I think Chase falls into that. I think CeeDee Lamb's pretty close. So I think CeeDee Lamb will get close to the Jefferson deal. I'd be surprised if he surpassed it, because I think what the Cowboys are going to try to do here, and they could completely fail at this, and that's probably what's gotten them into a little bit of trouble, is I think they're going to try to go to Dak Prescott. They're going to try to go to Micah Parsons. They're going to try to go to CeeDee Lamb and say, look, we're going to pay all you guys, and we're going to try to get you as close as we can to being the highest paid at your position. But help us out here, and don't be the highest paid at your position. If Mike is willing to do this, if CD's willing to do this, if Dak's willing to do this, we're basically all coming together and saying, hey, we're going to leave a little bit on the table, take a tiny home team discount, or give a tiny home team discount, and that's going to help us maintain, you know, this structure moving forward. You know, the Cowboys this offseason have spent almost nothing in this offseason. I think they're dead last in the league in spending. I think it's like $90 million total. I mean, it's unbelievable. But supposedly, the reason why they're doing this is because they're trying to set this up right now with these three guys. And so that's why I think if they can get CeeDee Lamb to take less, just a little less than Jefferson. So let's say by the time their rotation comes out, Jamar Chase is one, Jefferson's two, CeeDee Lamb's three, and they're separated by, say, $1 million AAV. That gives the Cowboys the ability to then go to Dak, go, look, you know, work with us here. We're trying to pay, man. We're trying to give you a ton of money. But just, you know, try to work with us and help us keep this in line in terms of the salary structure moving forward. So, but yeah, I do think those three guys, and look, Joe, you and I know how agents operate. They're going to sit there and go, if we're close to being at the top of the heap from a wide receiver standpoint, just we want that. Give us a dollar more.
Yes.
Like make us the highest paid. Figure out a way to do this, and maybe you smudge the numbers a little bit, you know, from a guaranteed standpoint, or throw something else in to try to make it happen. That to me, I think, would be a little bit of a sticking point with the Cowboys with Lamb. And by the way, he's probably considered by that organization the quote unquote easiest guy to sign before next season kicks off.
Charles Robinson with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So Charles, you have Jim Harbaugh winning a national championship in Michigan, and then bolting to the NFL to go coach the Chargers. And now, as of this morning, reports out there that potentially Dan Hurley of UConn, who's won back-to-back titles, could be going to the NBA to coach the LA Lakers. How do you kind of view the way that the college landscape is shifting here in terms of the coaching part of this, how that could impact things moving forward here, and the idea that guys at the top of their profession right now winning national championships are still leaving the college game potentially and bolting to the professional leagues?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if this happens, if Hurley leaves, it'd be the first time you saw the college football national champion head coach and college basketball national champion head coach leave, you know, in like, what, a six-month period, you know, from each other, a five-month period from each other. I think to me it speaks to what a lot of people are hearing on the NFL level. A lot of reporters are hearing, a lot of, you know, coaches and general managers. You have this influx of coaches who want to get out of college right now because of what is happening with NIL. I mean, Saban, he split. He left because he didn't want to deal with you know, the transfer portal, the constant need to recruit players back repeatedly, you know, dealing with the opaque nature of how this is all going to be settled in terms of how will athletes now be paid by colleges to be players versus, you know, what is the legality of, you know, different kinds of NIL money. I mean, college sports is a complete mess right now. It's a total train wreck. And I think you just have – there's so much uncertainty and pressure on staffs now year round that you just have, you know, coaches who I think don't necessarily want to deal with this. I'm not saying that's why Dan Hurley would leave and go to the Lakers, but I do think it has factored, you know, Harbaugh. There were obviously other extenuating circumstances as well. There were problems, you know, with certain individuals inside Michigan who are making it a hard time to get him a contract extension. Plus you had the NCAA, you know, looking at the whole, you know, taping of signals stuff. And so, you know, do I think that played into it? Sure. But there's no doubt in my mind that Saban left because of where things were going. Tom Izzo, you know, I don't know if Joe had heard this, but recently Tom Izzo was basically like, yeah, I can kind of see the end for me. You know, like he doesn't want to deal with it either. You know, and so I wonder if the trend that we're going to keep seeing is just more and more, from the NFL standpoint, more and more coaches who are getting calls from people at the college level saying, hey, I don't want to be here. I don't like coaching these kids, you know, because of how NIL is starting to change the matrix. And the NFL is worried about this too, because they feel like they're starting to see a wave. You're starting next year. You know, like I talked to a couple executives about this. So like, we're going to start next year getting mostly people who have been paid at the lower level. And we're wondering how that's going to change. Like, what are they willing to do now when they come into it? Are we going to get guys who are like, I don't want to play special teams? Are we going to get guys to say, I'm already professionalized coming in? Is there going to be more of, you know, in the draft run up, I'm just not going to do anything that would hurt my draft stock. I think, you know, Braylon Allen not running the 40-yard dash, coming out of Wisconsin, not doing any of the agility drills and sort of blaming it on injury that nobody really believed. And like there's a thought process that it's going to get a lot harder at the college ranks, but that eventually is going to leak over to the NFL where they're going to have to change their mindset when it comes to, I guess you would say player empowerment and what they're willing to put up with when they're starting to go through their process coming into the next level. So
that sounds a little bit like excessive whining to me, sort of like I hear from some college coaches, you know, in terms of like guys getting paid. But I understand it. I do. It's interesting because I do think that they're, well, eventually going to have to figure this out in terms of like contracts. And so you don't have like guys switching schools which I think that it will stabilize things with some coaches, but I don't think there's any question. You know, like a lot of these guys have gotten out of it. Yeah, I keep waiting for Izzo. I think he wants to take one more run at trying to win a championship, but you know, we talk here about even like college baseball coach Tim Corbin. I mean, some of these guys who are just a totally different landscape. It also, Charles, you know, the the quality of, because of NIL, keeping, you know, good college players who aren't necessarily great pro prospects, but maybe they're like lower round picks. I mean,
right.
In school, I mean, like the lower rounds of the draft, it looks like that's going to just be weaker now, right?
Well, I mean, you can look at it two ways, okay? And I do think you can have, sometimes you could have guys who go, you know, hey, I got an agent in my ear telling me, like, get your free agency stock, you know, clock started, just go, if you'll be a fourth round pick, whatever. Now, you could have some of those guys, particularly, let's say, even though it feels like we're going to see far and far less like redshirt sophomores in college football, now everybody's just going to play. But you're going to see some of these guys who could probably use another year of development, who might be a middle round pick or maybe even a late round pick, who stay for NIL money, which could be good for the NFL because a player stays in college and develops another year, right? Develops physically, develops more as a player, matures more as a person in college, which can be good for the NFL. And I also think the portal, you know, look, you're seeing quarterbacks that in the past, and I think we talked about this on the show before, maybe Jaden Daniels is not an NFL player right now. If this happens, his career happens 15 years ago, maybe, you know, I mean, go ahead and look at all the transfer portal. Michael Penix, you know, another guy. Like, it's, I think the portal's offered an opportunity, particularly from the quarterback standpoint, Bo Nix, for players who slam into a wall, particularly quarterbacks, in a program, who now can change, find another situation, and some may even go to a third, right? And find the situation that clicks, and then they can develop an NFL skill set in a certain style of an offense, which is good for the NFL because there's more viability to quarterbacks on the college level now to find success. A Riley Leonard, you know, who enters the portal, and now people are sort of saying, like, when I ask teams, like, okay, next year's quarterback class looks like it's going to stink. And they're like, all right, well, let's wait. Let's wait and see, because there's some quarterbacks that are switching teams. Let's see how that affects, you know, their horizon when they land, you know, in a place that maybe is a little more suited for a restart. Like Nix, I don't think there's any question when you look at his situation. He needed to change the scenery.
Yes.
It was just not going to work at Auburn. I think mentally, it had a lot to do mentally with him, how he went into the program and did not have that instantaneous success. And then I think once he got to Oregon, it was an offense much more suited to what his skill set was. And it gave him a mental, like when you talk to people in Denver, they're like, he just needed a fresh start. He needed to be away from everything that had kind of gone into that commitment at Oregon. And he got himself right. And he went into an offense that suited Sean Payton's play style, right? And so that made him worth a first-round pick to the Denver Broncos. You know, 15 years ago, that never would have happened, right? He probably would have been stuck at Auburn. He would have potentially transferred, had to sit out a season. Who knows, with, you know, stops and starts, how that looks for him. And then maybe he's a late-round pick and never really has traction on the NFL level. So it goes both ways. You could get some kids that stay and weaken the later rounds of the draft. You could also get some kids that stay, become better players, and then come back a year later and you know, teams are more enticed by their skill set at 22 than they would have been at 21.
So, Charles, it's taking into account everything we've seen to this point in the offseason. Obviously, Kansas City, San Francisco, the Super Bowl matchup last year. Are you convinced it's still Kansas City the favorite in the AFC, San Francisco the favorite in the NFC? Has your viewpoint on that changed? How do you view how things have gone this offseason and how that influences the top of each conference?
Don't be a Lions owner.
I mean,
maybe you should.
I do like the Lions, okay? I was at that game in the NFC title game, and I sat there and I watched a team that, to me, should have been in the Super Bowl had it not been, you know, Josh Reynolds catches a pass. Jahmyr Gibbs doesn't fumble. They take a field goal instead of going for it on fourth. There's just like a couple of decisions where it's like, if only one of those goes the other way, maybe the Lions are in the Super Bowl last year. I think they did everything they could this offseason to pay the guys they needed to pay. I think they're a better team even losing, you know, Cam Sutton, I still think, you know, the talent they picked up in the draft at cornerback, although it's a little dicey playing rookie corners, starting them. You know, I do think the talent level got better, especially on defense for the Lions. But that said, it's hard to not look at Kansas City. You know, it's not like they were – it's not like they didn't suffer losses in the offseason, but it's hard to look at them and not feel like they weathered a year last year where things were a little shaky and they come out of it on the other side, hopefully offensively. Now let's see what happens with Rashee Rice. I mean, there's definitely been enough offseason incidents to be a little nervous. You know, just – but coming out of the gate, come on. These are the most talented, veteran-laden teams, and they have talent at the positions that matter. They have some guys that are playing for contracts, which is good. You know, it stacks up for, you know, to me, out of the gate, those two Super Bowl teams should be right in the mix. It's just kind of like who's going to fill in the second tier below them. And I hate putting Detroit in that mix because what do? Every year we have this bias where we look at the best teams from the year before and we go, okay, well, they're obviously going to be back next year. And that doesn't always work out. And by the way, Jason Fitz, who obviously, you know, works with us, and you guys know what Jason Fitz is. Jason, we were doing a podcast yesterday, and he mentioned something that kind of blew my mind. And he said he had done some work at ESPN when he was at ESPN with Stats and Info there, and they came up, I think it was like this 10-year period, or it might have been even longer, where no team, only Rob Gronkowski accounted for the one player where a team was paying someone at the very top of their position and won a Super Bowl that year. He swears the stat is true.
Wow.
That was like this like 10-year block where no team had won a Super Bowl where they were paying a starter at the very top of their position. And I was like, no quarterback in that period was the highest paid player in the league? He was like, nope. And he said ESPN Stats and Info went through all of it, and they could only find Rob Gronkowski as accounting for the highest paid player at his position and the Patriots winning the Super Bowl in that year. And so I said to Fitz, I was like, couldn't we kind of gamble based on that piece of information? I was like, let's go. Let's wait until the Monday of kickoff, right? And then let's go down the list. Who's the top paid player at every single position? Let's take their team off, you know, the Super Bowl, and then let's find out who's left. I think it's a fascinating case study. Fitz swears it's true. We don't have a Yahoo Sports Stats and Info, so Fitz became the Yahoo Sports Stats and Info yesterday. But that to me was kind of
Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald wasn't the highest paid defensive tackle when they won it all.
He was not when they won the Super Bowl. No, he wasn't. Mm-mm.
Boy, and that seems wild.
And that's why he threatened the retirement. Remember the whole like, oh, he could retire after the season, and like it was so obvious that he was clearly making a play to get, you know, to get a salary bump, and he did. He got a couple of years of huge money coming out. That's when he went into the $30 million range. But no, he was not the highest paid player at his position the year that they won the Super Bowl.
That's amazing. I thought you were going to say Fitz blew my mind and said the Raiders are winning the Super Bowl this year. So.
I don't even mention the second he gets in the Raiders, I just stop listening. I'm like, all right, man, we're going to tune this out and move on. Man. I like too much hair gel fits to maintain that thin on your head.
That's right.
Soaked into your brain.
That's right. That Charles, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us, and we will talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, guys. Have a good morning.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex Row. We'll react to what Charles had to say there. Take your thoughts. 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.